Hello and welcome to JP Morgan's At Any Rate podcast. I'm Meera Chandlan from FX Strategy, and I'm joined today by Arindam Sandilya and James Nulligan, my colleagues from FX Strategy from Asia and London, respectively. Now, it has been an eventful week, more increase in US rates, more dollar strength, and more signs that the increase in yield is starting to affect risk sentiment more broadly. But with the dollar strength, we're also getting signs very clearly that central banks, aside from the Fed, of course, are getting more uncomfortable with the dollar strength that we have seen recently. And nowhere is that more pronounced than in Asia, where we've had Japan, Korea, and US had their first ever tri-party ministerial meeting, and they released a joint statement acknowledging their serious concerns in Japan and Korea about the yen and the Korean won. Now, you know, as a starting point, we know that a strong dollar is not a problem for the US or the Fed. It's only a problem for the rest of the world. So I don't think this is a precursor to imminent coordinated global intervention. Certainly no need for the US to sort of put any money towards this problem. But Arindam, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think it will make a difference if BOJ intervenes? And do you think this could morph into some sort of a coordinated intervention event?
Hey, Meera. Yeah, there's a lot of speculation around this, for sure. I kind of agree with your assessment that this doesn't look like a precursor to actual intervention over the weekend. First of all, the hurdle for joint intervention is quite high. It tends to happen only in exceptional circumstances. Recall the Japan earthquake of 2011. It takes something of that magnitude for various parties to come to the table. There's a technical issue around Korea not being a member of G7, and therefore these two different, one is a freely floating exchange rate regime, the other is not. Coordinating intervention is not straightforward. And more generally, you know, this concern around abnormally elevated dollar pairs in these currencies, is this a problem? It seems difficult to rationalize in this climate because, broadly, if this were 2022, you can, think about the inflation problem, imported inflation via weak FX and why people would be more concerned in that world. But broadly, inflation is on a downswing in most places. Japan is an exception. But even in Japan, dollar yen is more or less in line with rate differentials. It's well understood that excessive movement, which is the phrase that the MOF keeps referring to as a criteria for intervention, has not been met. Korea has more grounds to protest levels of dollar Korea on that basis. On some of our models, dollar Korea is overshooting BOP fundamentals, even adjusting for the recent rise in oil prices. But by and large, it doesn't feel like an exceptional moment in the pricing cycle for these currencies where central banks will have to step in, or the MOFs have to step in a historic way and coordinate intervention to bring down spot levels. So more or less, this is kind of an innovation in verbal intervention for me rather than a precursor to actual action over the weekend.
Thanks, Arindam. But what's interesting to me is with the dollar strength being so broad, the one thing that stands out in Asia is that dollar CNY seems oddly stable despite all of these events that are happening. We're curious what's happening with the fixes there, and if you're noticing any interesting pushback from the authorities there. We also had President Biden mention tariffs on China itself. Is any of this going to make a difference? And at what point do you think that we could actually see this become a broader move that also encompasses the yuan?
Yeah, so for the CNY, I think the problem is quite the opposite of what the Japanese and the Koreans have. So unlike dollar yen or dollar Korea, PBOC's issue is that they're holding dollar CNY down at a level that seems inconsistent with prevailing rate differentials, right? It's not high enough. On our models, dollar CNY should be between 1 to 1.5% higher, so call it around 735 instead of 725. And if indeed the Japanese and the Koreans were able to cool their respective currency pairs through verbal intervention, I think the PBOC would welcome it. It would cool some of the pressures on dollar CNY. It'll help with their CNY basket valuation problem, which has passively risen 2% since March on the JPM TWI, because it's essentially acting like a long dollar proxy, only with worse carry. And this is not desirable in China's current growth climate. So ultimately, dollar CNY is stable because there is this intractable fixing versus market basis that there is no really easy answer to. If the fixing is moved higher and the PBOC has been gradually moved the fixing higher, you know, we fixed above 710 for 1 or 2 days higher, and then spot jumps towards the upper end of the band, and you have to do work to keep spot from breaching this. So the fixing versus market gap doesn't really close, and you are bleeding intervention dollars in the interim. The only way out of this is if the DXY falls, but that's not really the climate we find ourselves in. Hence, I don't really see a way out of the PBOC holding the fixing stable and hence keeping dollar CNY static. What do tariffs do to this state of affairs? Well, the fear is back. And I think immediate fears are not going to be realized as much because the steel and aluminum tariffs that we're talking about, they won't really affect a large part of the Chinese export basket to the US. But the fear always is that you start with steel and aluminum and then it becomes a bigger problem. I suspect we are only going to deal with this issue more seriously in terms of market pricing as we get closer to the elections in H2. But for now, I mean, this is a shot across the bow, and it's one more reason for investors who are bearish on CNY. Keep holding on to those positions.
Thanks, Arindam. So let's turn to Europe now. James, coming to you. The weakening in the region seems to have run out of steam a bit, and perhaps aside from the Scandies, what are the main catalysts in your mind for the region going forward? And then, obviously geopolitics is one where the situation is quite fluid, we don't really know which way things are going to turn up, but how could geopolitics, perhaps a scenario in which it escalates, how could that affect, your view on the currencies within the region?
Sure. Thanks, Mira. So in terms of some of the main catalysts, I'd say the PMIs, which are out next week, that's one area we've been discussing for a while now in terms of broadening improvement in the global manufacturing data and its impact on FX. So if you look at the PMI internals, they've been really quite solid. And do suggest that we could see a further improvement in the headline data next week. There's obviously different ways that can play out in European FX space. You could see cyclical currencies like Stocky appreciate or anti-cyclical currencies like Swiss depreciate. But clearly the other important thing going on is the recent rise in US yields, which is stopped for now currencies like Stocky being able to benefit from stronger growth. So Swiss is really the one currency which, as a funding currency, where its ability to price in improving growth isn't hurt as much by rising US yields, especially if you look at a pair like dollar Swiss. But clearly one additional risk there is the recent escalation in geopolitics that you mentioned, Mira. But again, with a pair like dollar Swiss, you have one safe haven currency versus another there. So it's a bit more insulated from the geopolitical risk that compared to, say, a euro Swiss, which would be more vulnerable to any further escalation in the situation as on the geopolitical front. But ultimately, to get the cyclical currencies in Europe like Stocky, Nokki, Sterling to participate in the growth improvement, you're going to need to see US yields calm down. And given the strength in the US data and the recent Fed commentary, that's not really a call our Treasury strategists feel is the right time to make right here over the short term. So Swiss is probably the right risk reward in European space in terms of its ability to price in any improvement in the PMIs over the next month or so. But clearly, we do need to keep an eye on geopolitical developments as well in terms of whether there's any escalation there. So turning back to you, Mira, what are your thoughts on Eurodollar here? Obviously, you've been discussing yield compression as well, affecting the currency carry trade. How's that narrative evolving at the moment?
Thanks, James, for your comments and the questions. Now, on Eurodollar, look, the currency is weakened. It's moved very much in line with the underlying yield spreads, the repricing of the Fed and the divergence that has opened up versus the ECB, roughly 80 basis points of cuts priced in for the ECB for 2024 versus just under 40 basis points for the Fed. That's the widest sort of policy divergence that we've seen. And if you looked at, you know, what the fair value is based on either real yield or nominal yield differentials, that has come off, but and Eurodollar is largely tracking that. I think probably fair value is lower at around 104 if you look at nominal yield spreads. But because real spreads have been more well supported, Eurodollar is really tracking that that more closely. I think if it's status quo in that we see, you know, the ECB actually cut before the Fed, which is what is priced in right now for markets, we can see perhaps a couple more cents of weakening in euro towards a target of 105. Perhaps you could test 104. We are open-minded to some undershoot here from the euro if the ECB does cut before the Fed. I mean, after all, this doesn't usually happen. The start of easing cycles tends to be led by the Fed, not the ECB, at least, you know, since the inception of the euro. So this would be the first time since the inception of the euro that the ECB would be, you know, would be going further earlier and further than the Fed as far as cuts are concerned. But I think based on that factor alone, there'll be limits to how much euro dollar can weaken since, the local regional growth is also picking up. And I think prospects of an ECB cut should further extend that sort of turn in growth momentum. We're already seeing bank lending standards, for example, start to bottom out. And we've seen that, you know, in the past for the euro, for the currency, it does matter. You know, it's not just about the policy divergence. It does matter what the underlying growth dynamic is doing. So I'm sort of respecting that in the near term and thinking that, you know, that's going to be at least a partial offset to this policy divergence that's opening up between the Fed and the ECB. I think, you know, as a euro bear, I would have been a lot more comfortable on, if this were sort of this policy divergence was unfolding alongside a divergence in growth as well. Can we get to parity? Look, I think for parity, we do need a fresh catalyst. Maybe we need another increase in energy prices, which sort of dampens this upturn in growth sentiment that we're seeing in the region. Maybe, you know, as we get closer to the US elections and tariffs become something that's more in the news, that starts to turn sentiment as well. So, keeping an open mind here, but at the moment, the main focus is on the policy divergence. And frankly, the next, FOMC meeting on May 1st, I think Jay Powell could get pushed on his change in tone at the upcoming FOMC meeting. We could get certainly more Q&A on that. So I'd be watching that pretty closely. And I suspect that should have some spillover effects into weakening euro a bit more from here. On the carry trade, look, that has been something in vogue for the last 2 years almost. Heading into 2024, we were looking for returns from carry baskets to run out of steam. That was based on two pillars of sort of motivation. The first one was that, central banks would be cutting rates led by the highest yielders, resulting in yield compression. We are seeing that unfold, absolutely, particularly in EM, not in G10, of course, because as you know, the Fed, the BOE, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, the highest yielders have all been fairly resolute. And the second reason was that prospects of Fed easing, which typically, helps the lowest yielding currencies the most. But that's the bit that the market and we have been challenged on, I think, is that the repricing of the Fed has resulted in a weakening in the funders like Asia the most, which is why we're seeing intervention talk coming up from that part of the world and intervention activity having gone up. So look, I mean, where do we go from here? I think the issues to remember are, obviously there'll be a couple of high carry candidates like say Brazil and Mexico, where the central banks are just not projected to cut that much. But at the end of the day, as a broad market, we are seeing overall yield compression still unfold. So far, volatility has also in the large part been declining. So that means on a vol adjusted basis, carry has done pretty well. We've actually seen pretty solid returns from carry year to date. But if we do get this volatility event down the road, whether it comes from another bout of Fed repricing, whether it comes from geopolitics, then we just have to remember that the amount of insulation, the yield spread we have to contain that is actually going to be much narrower this time around. So I'm a bit more sort of wary about how long the positive returns from carry can continue. Obviously, There is a scenario here where if growth continues to be resilient in the US and outside the US, and we're not getting any volatility shocks, then obviously returns can continue further. The last thing I'll say on carry is, you know, the dollar to me is still a pretty high carry candidate. It's a defensive currency, which even by the end of the year will end up yielding more than 40% of the currencies globally. It's still dominating from a growth standpoint as well. So I just don't see the conditions in place for the dollar carry narrative to run out of steam here. And that continues to be sort of a core part of our view. So we'll stop there. You know, since we've had a discussion that's totaling up to nearly 20 minutes, but please take a look at our website if you want to explore any of these themes in more detail. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content for more information, including important disclosures. 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on April 19, 2024.